Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. Happy Columbus Day. I know I kind of left it out there on Friday whether I would do this live or not, just in honor of Columbus Day, because I know there's so many people that are trying to denigrate this particular holiday as well as others. The bottom line is I did really want to do that just to stick it in the progressives' eyes. I'm not one to necessarily like holidays. And as a matter of fact, I look at holidays as more of a form of tax on corporations, businesses, or what have you. Because bottom line, what we require of businesses on a holiday is that we be paid for that time off. And so that definitely puts a tax on any small business. And so most really small businesses, self-employed and so forth, like moi, ends up having to either, you know, get stuck paying, or we work through and we actually work on holidays and so forth. So anyway, not a fan of holidays, and I'm definitely not a fan of trying to change holiday names for political correctness. I'm okay with getting rid of a lot of holidays, especially communist holiday like Labor Day. Anyway, nevertheless, I do believe that we should set aside time for very specific things, for, you know, remembering, honoring, and those types of things. There's nothing wrong with that. But to make it a mandatory holiday where the government requires that employers have to pay people to not be productive, I just have a hard time with that. That is the antithesis of what I believe our government is supposed to be able to do. I think it definitely falls well outside that realm. So as I always do, the show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. You are truly listening to the only show that actually provides a tangible solution in what it will take to get the federal government into compliance to the Constitution. Believe me, there's a lot of people out there. I'm going to talk a little bit about it today, but there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, postulating and trying to, what do they call that? Proselyte their ideas and so forth. But bottom line, it tends to always come down to something in it for them. They're, you know, like Withams, what's in it for me? Well, a lot of them are really out to, you know, sell a lot of books or, you know, gain market space or what have you. So anyway, let me get into some groveling. If you are looking to help, if you want to get involved, if you've got a passion for your country, for the Constitution, and for saving these, I don't want to call them relics, these principles that our framers had literally established this republic on, such as liberty and sovereignty, then you're more than welcome to get involved. You can, there's many ways you can get involved, but one of the ways, obviously, is listening to the show. Another way is actually, you know, reaching out. Send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you have a computer and a phone, you can be instrumental in literally helping. And there are other ways to help. And as you've heard, I've had the Constitution Club founder on a few times. And so actually hoping to get some more time with Keith this week so that you can kind of get a better inside view of the Constitution Club. And hopefully those of you who are driving home and doing those commutes and so forth, or whatever it is you're doing that, you know, obviously you're probably busy. Who isn't? Everybody suffers from that disease today. But hopefully you'll remember or you make a note that you will actually take the time to check out the Constitution Club. All that being said, it is constitutionclub.ning.com. So if you take the time to check it out, it won't take you much longer to become a member. And so as I've said, and I just gave you a couple of opportunities of how to get involved. Again, thanks for tuning in, especially on Columbus Day. I would imagine that there's probably a lot of people out doing other things. I know that I would be, but I have too big of a passion for this. I have yet to really rebroadcast a show because of a holiday or what have you. I think it's far more important to try to maintain some kind of leverage or some kind of push on you to getting you to actually start getting involved, taking action, learning and doing those things that we all need to be doing. And really, the focus has to be, and that's what the focus of this show is, the focus has to be in getting the focus back to the state capitol, getting your state legislators to understand their responsibilities in saving us. Literally, that's what it is going to take. So with the fact that I've actually scanned the news, and there's some interesting news out there, we could talk all day about the news, but what I look in the news and what I look for when I scan the news is any type of sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. I even look out my window every once in a while and go, nope, I don't see it. I don't see the federal government stepping back from their unconstitutional usurpations that they have taken from the states. So what I have to do then is I have to turn to you and say, well, what's it going to take for you to get involved? What's it going to take for you to actually, you know, go to constitutionclub.ning.com or send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so that we can actually get a little bit of your help. And it just takes a little bit of time to do this, folks. It really is not that difficult. And it's not like I'm really, I am not seeking any type of monetary rewards or anything like that. This is not about me. This is not about GR. This is about getting the time and energy moving in this movement so that we can literally push back on what the progressives are doing and literally restore our constitutional republic, where the states are sovereigns over all the things that they did not delegate to the general government. And actually, you'll probably find that going through the state constitutions, they're probably usurping the sovereignty of the people because they never amended their constitution to allow the state to administer health care and a lot of these types of things. So, you know, it's about getting our government servants, our public servants, into compliance, into honoring that constitution or those powers that have been enumerated, because every state has enumerated constitutions as well. I don't think that there's any state that has a general constitution that basically gives the state government general powers to do anything and everything. I think we've learned our lesson hundreds of years ago not to do those types of governments, because the byproduct of that will be tyranny. You will have a despot that will literally want to take every ounce and every bit of your sovereignty and your powers away. So one of the things I would like to do is ask you a question. So here's the question that I believe anybody that has been listening to this show, because I actually saw it, I think it was on Fox sometime this afternoon. And the question is this: why are the elites the ones who are dividing America? And I think you can answer this very quickly. Because they have the money to be able to inject enough type of pressures to actually utilize one of the most effective tools. Division is the most effective tool in keeping people from uniting and working together. So that's why they want to pit us in every form of demographics, whether it be our religious beliefs, whether it be our racial differences, our gender differences, and they even use sexual orientation. They use every type of demographic or possibility of dividing us. And as I turn around, I just keep on looking at, oh, well, there's a new way of being divided. And as far as I'm concerned, they are literally winning because we have failed to recognize that that's exactly what's happening. How great would it be if all of a sudden people of all these different races, all these different religions and everything else said, you know what, I'm done with this. Let's come together and let's fix the problem. Because if we stand united, we will literally be able to fix this problem. Let me get into this too, because I know that there has been a plethora of talk, and I don't think we need to talk anymore about Mr. Kavanaugh or his confirmation. Frankly, I'm kind of done, and I know that there are a few issues with Kavanaugh. As a matter of fact, I believe that if you swung a bat at any, and I'm not telling you to swing a bat, but if you swung a bat at any justice, any jurist out there, you would probably find equal, if not more, issues with every single one out there that is sitting on a court somewhere. Every jurist on the Supreme Court, as well as district courts and even state courts, have issues. And the primary issue is that their education and understanding of our Constitution is based upon the revisionist paradigm. I am absolutely blown away that the federal jurists or federal judges do not take an oath to support and defend the Constitution like every other public servant. They are actually violating the Constitution by saying that, I can look it up during the break, but they do not have any affirmation, or they do not swear that they will support and defend the Constitution. So because I'm going on a hard break, I'll actually look up that that federal oath that the jurists have to take. There are state jurists that they do have to support the Constitution, but the federal ones, there's a question for you. Why is it that they do not have to do that? And with that, I will be right back after a couple of words from our sponsor. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so I did check it out. And let me do this. Let me actually read what the Constitution says. Because who knows, I might be pulling your leg. And more importantly, I hope that when I do say these things, and when I do read this stuff, that it, you know, gives you the motivation to go and actually look this stuff up for yourself. I don't want you to take my word for it. I could actually be writing this stuff and reading it where, you know, I could be perverting the word of the Constitution. And that's why it's important that we understand, know, so that when we hear it and it doesn't sound a jive, then you can go look it up and go, yep, look at that. He was actually stating it wrong or making it up as he goes along. But this is Article 6, Section 3. The senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislators and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. Pretty clear. Judges have to be sworn in to support and be bound to support this Constitution. So I say that the federal judges are not being bound to supporting the Constitution. So that's how they get away with injecting their non-constitutional opinions and agendas. And it says right here, this is the oath of justices and judges for the federal courts. And it says, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will administer justice without respect to persons and do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me as blank, which would be probably be judge, under the Constitution and laws. Now it says under the Constitution and laws of the United States. It doesn't say anywhere where they're supporting the Constitution. It doesn't. And so that's how they get away with actually injecting things that violate the Constitution, because they're not bound to support the Constitution. And so this is a part of how they have been able to slide away from the, you know, at least on the court side, this is how the court system has been able to slide away from supporting and upholding the Constitution. This is really important. I want you, I could want all day. You really need to understand this, because if you do get this, then you become a very powerful weapon against misinformation and against the imbeciles out there that are basically parroting the progressive dialogue. Again, the primary issue is that their education, these justices' education and understanding of the Constitution, is based upon the revisionist paradigm, as I've said before. What this means, as the court aggrandized its role unconstitutionally over the past couple of centuries, it has taken latitudes, and real estate is literally taken away our liberties as well as our properties. And if you understand in context to what properties are, it does not have to be real estate. It can be your very opinion. When they start stating that a person can't use these words or a person can't, you know, say these types of things, it's hateful, or even these types of thoughts or these types of expressions. The court has literally been playing and delving into that. The understanding of jurisdiction has been completely lost, and this understanding must be restored. The only people that can restore it is Congress, and the only people to get Congress to do that job are the state legislators. They must force, and this is why the only process to accomplish this is Republic Review, because that is the state legislators using force on Congress to actually doing what they need to do to obtain compliance to the Constitution. That's why I invite you to go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and look at the content there, and you will be astounded that it actually has a process that will actually work. I've yet to find somebody that really has wow, that's a big hole. There's a problem with that. If you find one, please let me know. I'd be happy to address it. It's not about me again. This is all about doing what we need to do. The intent behind the Supreme Court was to ensure compliance to the Constitution, not the injection of agendas, nor the expansion of jurisdiction. This is why I've gone several times, I'm going to do it again today. I read what Marshall actually said during the Virginia ratification debates. And so I want to just read this small little snippet. And the reason this is important, my friends, is because Marshall was actually instrumental in self-aggrandizing the federal government and the court. But this is what he says. Has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? Does he understand it so? And he's talking about the anti-federalists that are saying, oh, these guys can make powers on all, laws on all of these types of things. They're not limited. Does he understand it so? Can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the same state? Can they go beyond the delegated powers? If they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void. So that's John Marshall basically talking about the jurisdiction and how the court system is to guard us from, you know, allowing the federal government in creating laws that are unconstitutional. Well, what happened? Well, a guy by the name of Hamilton got a hold of Marshall and basically started giving him tutelage in how to self-aggrandize and bypassing all of these real noble things that they supposedly had created in this Constitution to keeping the federal government in check. Anyway, in essence, every jurist in the federal court system, if they are abiding by the legal definitions of the Constitution, are really nothing more than a bunch of Bernard P. Milton Oliver Fifes. Do you know who that is? We also know him as Barney of Mayberry RFD. And what I'm saying is that if you really understand the role of the judges, they do not have the noble responsibility of pushing segregation. They don't have the responsibility of pushing homosexual marriage or abortion. They only have the jurisdiction over those things that are enumerated within the Constitution. And if the issue is not an enumerated power that has been delegated to the federal government, like those few issues I just mentioned, they're supposed to dismiss it, stating that they have no jurisdiction, and they just basically return it to the state court and say, it is your ultimate decision on these things, period. And when I say that they're basically Barney Fifes, you know, they're these guys that just basically have this responsibility over those very specific jurisdictions. And so that's why they have this little, you know, bullet in their pocket just in case they need it. But 9 times out of 10, everything that comes to the Supreme Court is outside their jurisdiction. They don't have any jurisdiction over energy. They don't have any jurisdiction over healthcare. They don't have any jurisdiction over a plethora of stuff because the federal government has been self-aggrandizing themselves with the aid and assistance of the court. That's why we're in this mess that we're in. It's that simple. So let me give you something to think about, because this is Columbus Day, and let's make this a little bit about Columbus. Columbus Day is obviously a national holiday, and it's not just a national holiday here, it's a national holiday in many countries of the Americas and elsewhere, which officially celebrates the anniversary of Christopher Columbus' supposedly arrival in the Americas on October 12th, 1492. And so, as you may know, and I know I've said this before, Christopher Columbus was an Italian explorer, navigator, and a colonist who completed 4 voyages across the Atlantic, but it wasn't under the crown of Italy. It was under the auspices of the Catholic monarchs of Spain. What is really, really important that I hope that you take away from this is that Christopher Columbus was practically the very last assertion of the Roman Catholic Church and its controls over Europe. Because what ended up happening is, as you know, Spain was the power. And the Armada of Spain, that was the world's greatest empire at that point in time. And when the Armada of Spain went up to Britain and tried to basically take and seize control of Britain, and they beat them, that was the change of power from the Catholic Church to a non-Catholic controlled church, because the King of Britain had broken away, as you know, over the desires of divorce and marriage. And so when that power shift changed, all of a sudden, the focus then started moving away from the Catholic Church driving expanse of the Western society or Western culture and civilization. And the reason why Britain got involved in the Americas was to expand its mercantile system so that it could become a more powerful economic engine than anybody else. And they did a really good job at that. But I am up at a hard break, so I can't finish this until we come back. So please stay tuned, and I will finish this whole importance and significance of Columbus Day. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So as I was saying, the Catholic Church, or I should say the papal or the pope, the leadership of the church was literally in control of still a few nations in Europe. Most of the nations were breaking away from the actual church control, and they were actually becoming more of a noble monarch type of government instead of a theocracy, if you understand what I'm saying. And so there was literally this shift, but I believe that the divine hand of providence was involved in kind of pointing towards the Americas. And I want you to understand this, that when Portugal and Spain, who was literally under the auspices of the Catholic Church, as they came to the Americas, because they had unattested control over Europe at that point in time, they were the power du jour. And so as they came to the Americas, they completely missed the gem of the Americas. As they started going through South America, Central America, and Mexico, they found all sorts of riches. And as they went through North America and north, they couldn't find anything. As a matter of fact, they said, ah, that's just nothing up there. We don't care about that. We'll leave that alone. And so as they were stealing and robbing and pillaging and plundering and subjugating the indigenous people, if you want to call them that, or the Mayans, the Aztecs, and those people, and was literally integrating their own their race into the indigenous people, because that's, as we understand, that's what a Mexican is, right? A Mexican is both a descendant of the Indian as well as the Spaniard. And so what they did was they tried to create this race that they could subjugate. And it wasn't until, after the 1800s, when Mexico finally, declared its independence, it took a while. But the whole point is that if you look at Europe today, what are the countries that are in absolute trouble? Greece, Spain, Italy, Portugal, all those countries in there. And now they're being overran, and I don't wish this on anybody, they're being overran by these radical Islamists. There had to have been divine providence that saw the opening of the portal to the Americas. And by the time Britain was ripe to be able to defend, it was able to come in. And instead of establishing a theocracy, but they did have Christian churches. And I do clearly assert that America, the United States, was a Christian nation, because every state had a state-established church, but it was not this type of a papal or that type of theocracy. And so what we ended up doing was we were able to institute a republic that was based on individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and not based on a theocracy or not based on a monarchy or anything else. And there's no doubt in my mind that the good Lord had made all of these things happen. As a matter of fact, I don't think anybody would ever assert that Christopher Columbus was the technical discoverer of the Americas. We already know that there's enough evidence to know that he didn't do that. But if you understand how empires projected themselves, it was literally, and I'll just state this, if you understand also Europe's need to expand and its conquests, unlike any other empire throughout the annals of mankind, well, this is due to the innovations that were made in ocean-going ships and the nation's ability to project force and presence. And so at that time, it was Spain that was the most capable of doing that, but they were quickly replaced a century later by the Brits. And the French were trying to do it too, but the Brits were the next empire that literally dominated the globe for a while. Regardless of what one thinks of Christopher Columbus, only a godless secularist would deny that this, along with a plethora of all the innovations and discoveries, were a direct result of the divine hand of providence or intervention in establishing this great republic where people could truly be free. Because I've said this before, if you look at the scale of liberty, on one end of the scale is full liberty. Understanding that is the doctrine, I believe, of Christ, because no one can be compelled to be saved. No one can be compelled to do anything. You have to willingly choose to give of yourself, to be charitable. You have to willingly choose to take his name, follow him, obey his commandments, and those types of things. And on the opposite end of the scale of liberty is full subjugation, where you have no choice. You will be forced or you will be killed. And so if you are in the business of saving your life, then you will do anything and everything that they tell you or you're subscribed to do. And so the one thing I hope that most people take away is not that necessarily Christopher Columbus was a great person, but he was the one that opened the new world as a portal to Europe. And I believe it was for the intent and purposes of the Lord, even though there was a lot of pillaging, and there was a lot of conquesting and death and mayhem. I will tell you this, and I wrote this in my book, that if you look at the culture that was existing in the Americas, had they had the ability to project themselves as an empire and go into Europe, they would have dealt with Europe far worse, because the history actually has recorded how mean and brutal they were to their own fellow tribes. Even the American Indians, when they went hunting for buffalo, most people say, oh, they're conservationists. No, they would actually drive a whole herd of buffalo off of a cliff and then go take what they wanted and left the rest to rot. That has been recorded. And as a matter of fact, I would highly recommend anybody read A Patriot's Guide to America's History. And I forget the authors. I can look it up. But it is it's actually on my recommended reading list. If you go to Mobiestrip Press, recommended reading, mobiestrippress.com, just look for A Patriot's Guide to America's History. And they actually talk about the truth, and they get away from the political correctness that America infected, you know, all these people, millions of people died. They actually get into the real objective truth of what the reality truly was, because a lot of things that came out of here, there were a lot of diseases that were taken back to Europe that we picked up. So there was a symbiotic relationship in sharing germs, diseases, and so forth. But anyway, as I kind of wrap this up, I just want you to understand that there is a true meaning of what Christopher Columbus did. And he actually was the one that created the bridge to the New World, so that the expanse of Western society could come here and actually establish, outside of the control of the crowns and the theocracies, or from the churches, a true nation that was designed on individual liberty and sovereignty. And if you read a lot of books, and I'm going to mention Mark Levin here real quick, if you read his books, not once does he ever attribute, and I'm not picking on him, I understand why he does this, because of his faith, but he never once attributed to the Christian movement and the Christian drive of the Western society in establishing America. You have to be completely blind to not inject this, or at least acknowledge Christianity's role in enlightenment. Who was it that brought the higher education to society, colleges and so forth? It was all established by the Christian churches. So anyway, let me move on. I'm often asked by many people to connect with a lot of people, big names, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, blah, blah, blah. And I truly appreciate everyone's interest and support. And I want you to know that I actually do reach out, and I reach out to people all the time. And I never dismiss anybody. I actually try to go down the path and testing or checking people out and finding out, hey, is this somebody we can work together with? I often find people that are caught up in their own paradigms. They're really working on what they want to do, and it's really a self-interest issue for them. And so as I reach out to these, you know, expressing their interest or on ideas on fixing their problems, I sadly find that they're what I would call an evangelical. And so an evangelical is somebody that is doing a ministry kind of thing. And those are people that are making a living out of this preaching of patriotism and what have you. And so most are only pointing to the problems. As I deal with a lot of these people, most are only pointing to the problems, but they're not offering a solution. Most. And so as I kind of inject myself, and over time, I find that very few really think about a solution. And what I really find is that what they're offering is those few who are offering a solution are really only offering a mechanism for them to either sell merchandise or expand their market space. And bottom line, these are patriots who are seeking self-interest. And so it's a real common thing that I run into. And why am I telling you this? Because there's a contrast to this, but I want to give you the background on it, but I'm actually at a hard break. So when we come back, I want to give you the background, because I going away into this break, I don't want you to think that everybody I deal with are these evangelicals. I'm dealing with really good people, such as, Keith Borders, as well as Bob Schultz, as well as G. Edward Griffin, and so forth. And I will get into the different paradigms between these as soon as we get back from this heartbreak. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So, I'm not going to besmirch anybody for having the requirement to putting food on their table. That's not the whole point here. And I'm going to tell you, in the magnitude of patriotic people out trying to sell books and blogs, radio shows, and so forth, there are thousands, tens of thousands of them. This movement started a long time ago. I mean, what was Buckley's? Robert F. Buckley? William F. Buckley. William F. Buckley was definitely a pioneer in this. And as a matter of fact, when I was talking to G. Edward Griffin, it was a relatively new era in the 50s when people started waking up to communism in America. And so it started about that point in time. But if you go back throughout America's history, if you understand the Second Awakening back in the early 1800s, that is really wasn't an awakening as much as I consider it a turning away. Because that's when all of a sudden the evangelical, or I should say the Christian leadership in America, moved from being a layman's type of church where John Adams' father was a leader in the church as well as a cobbler. He made a living in taking care of his family and making shoes, but he also led the Puritans up there in Massachusetts. And this was common everywhere throughout the United States. Everybody had a job, and then their part-time job was, you know, doing something in the community. And some of these people were church leaders. Some of them did other things, sheriff or what have you. That public service job was not a full-time job. Same thing with the clergy, other than in the Catholic Church. See, the Catholic Church was where it was a full-time job, and eventually the Catholic Church made it impossible for people to have property and so forth so that they could build wealth and so forth. But anyway, what ended up happening was in this second awakening, I call it the first turning away, because this was where all of a sudden the focus shifted, where church leadership whether they be, you know, evangelical or regardless, they started becoming professionals where that was their only job, and they were making their living off of being a leader, a way leader. Today, these evangelical patriots, I consider kind of the second turning away, because as people started realizing, hey, there's a lot of money here because of this divisiveness in politics, and we don't have to fix the problem, and the greater the problem gets, the more money there is to be made. So as I go through and I start reaching out, I'm just trying to put this into context, I'm meeting a lot of these what I call evangelical patriots. And they're all stating that their only path to saving this would be this or that. And recently, I was just ran into a guy this weekend, and he said that the way forward is the Declaration of Independence. And bottom line, he's talking about succeeding, that, you know, we have a right to put away our government. I think we also have a responsibility of trying to fix this contract before we actually take that ultimate step. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what Jefferson said in the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, both him and Madison. But anyway, there's plenty of people that are trying to peddle their stuff. But what is more important isn't all of these negative things. I'm actually finding people out there that are not self-serving evangelicals, that these people are what I'd like to call reframers. These are people who are not steeped in their biases and self-serving profession. They're not trying to make a living out of this. They are literally giving of themselves, and they are literally working. And I am finding that it is those people, and I'll just say this, I don't think that any of these guys would probably call themselves good, righteous men, but what they're doing and the reasons that they're doing it is a good, righteous cause. I don't think that these guys would, you know, imagine themselves, you know, being hailed as, you know, a religious leader. But when it comes to liberty, I do believe that that gets into ideological space of, like I said before, on the scale of liberty, it gets into that space of, you know, the pure liberty or that the doctrine of Christ and the doctrine of Satan, where we're subjugated and we have no choice. And so I'm trying to, you know, create this association, this connection between, you know, those who are truly selfless and serving to try to solve our problems, who are out there working and willing to look at and becoming a part of. And like I said, I have ran into quite a few people that actually are champions of liberty and so forth. It's just unfortunate that there seems to be a much greater sea of self-serving evangelical patriots. And that's really what I have come to realize and recognize. So with that, I just want you to know, because I do get a prod every once in a while, and this past 2 weeks, there's been a couple of people on Facebook that have prodded me, hey, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this guy? You know, have you checked out with this guy? Because they're just learning about Republic Review, and they, you know, want to get involved, and they go, hey, have you talked to this guy? Anyway, long story short, I want you to know that even though, you know, there is this evangelical movement going on where people are out peddling, and their only intent is to sell you books and to make money because they're trying to put bread on their table. Again, like I said, I'm not going to just besmirch anybody that's doing that, but I will tell you that the Christ or our Lord and Savior did not inspire our framers because they were doing it and creating an entrepreneurial enterprise. I have said many times before, if we're going to be successful, we have to put away our self-interest and our differences, and that is the recipe to success. So let me get into, because I do have enough time, I do want to cover one of these extracts from the Pennsylvania ratification debates. And so, as I always state, are the words in our founding documents that I am citing the words of deceit? Or are the words that we've been taught and words that we're hearing, even from these evangelical patriots, how they twist things and paraphrase things, I think it's really important to actually read the documents and cite the documents and stay away from trying to paraphrase. Do not take my word for it. Read it for yourself. But let me tell you what Mr. Wilson said in Pennsylvania. And he says, "But it is not pretended that the line is drawn with mathematical precision. The inaccuracy of language must, to a certain degree, prevent the accomplishment of such a desire. Whoever views the matter in a true light will see that the powers are as minutely enumerated and defined as was possible, and will also discover that the general clause against which so much expectation is taken is nothing more than what was necessary to render effectual the particular powers that are granted, period." And so when people look at, you know, this, that general, the general welfare and defense clause right there in the enumerated powers, they say, ah, right there. What that is literally meaning is that they have the general powers to execute those, and they have a responsibility to do that equally. That's why the uniformity clause is there too. But bottom line, these are the only powers. They can't use that clause, as Madison said several times. And in his last act as president in 1817, March 3rd, he stated that the General Welfare Clause is not a portal for assuming new roles, responsibilities, and powers that are not delegated, that clause only pertains to those delegated powers in the Constitution. Got to be very, very clear on this, friends. We have to understand that the powers that are delegated are, just as he says here, minutely enumerated and defined. So with that, I have a jump into, and I want to get into this because I think this is really, really good, and I don't have time. So I'm going to get into this tomorrow. This is my favorite perspective of the Constitution out of all of the ratification debates. This is Mr. Iredell out of North Carolina. And what he does is he looks at the Constitution as a power of attorney. And so I'm not going to get into what he says, but Mr. Nicholas also makes a very similar reference in the Virginia ratification debates. What he states in the Virginia ratification debates is, let's say I have 1,000 acres, and let's say I am going to bequeath some of those acres. I think he says 500, but let's say I take 10 acres, and I'm going to give it to the government for them to do with what they want. As I have done that, do I need to enumerate, or do I need to go and resurvey my land for my deed? No, I don't have to go and recheck and reapply for my land. The only land that has to be identified is the land that is being given. And that's why in the Constitution, they identified the corners of the land, or the boundaries of the powers that were delegated to do this, to do this, and to do this. They were brilliant men. They clearly understood what we needed to do to protect us from wandering and from the usurping of powers and centralizing powers so that they could literally inject tyranny. And over time, through indirect sources and indirect means, they have actually been able to inject tyranny upon us. That is why they dictate how much water your toilet can flush and the type of energy you can consume with a bulb. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I'm doing it with your help. I'll be back tomorrow. God bless. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.